As a parent, you may have some questions in terms of what is an EMT or an educational management team? What is a screening meeting? What is a 504? Oh, so many acronyms to be had in the world of special education. It is my hope that my guest, Jennifer Engel Fisher, will help guide parents and professionals even of what this terminology means and how to have better outcomes at the IEP table and to work collaboratively. Welcome to the Special Education Strategist Podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. If you are a new parent to special education or thinking that your child may need special education, tune in to get some tips. If you are a professional and uncertain how some of this process works, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. I am a mom and special educator. I have sat on both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional. Over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a download, a like, and a follow. Let's get ready to strategize special education style. Welcome to the show and thank you for joining us. I'm excited to chat with you and help demystify the special education process for parents. And so let's get started. Can you introduce yourself and let us know how you help strategize for families special education style?
Hi, thanks for having me, Wendy. My name is Jennifer Engel Fisher. I am the Associate Director and the Director of the Learning Disabilities Division of Weinfeld Education Group. We are an educational consulting group primarily focusing on advocacy for students with special needs, which includes giftedness and twice exceptional. We assess students to determine their present levels of academic achievement. We support families through both the Section 504 and IEP processes. We do classroom observations, attend IEP meetings and Section 504 meetings. And the core of Weinfeld Education Group is really working collaboratively. One of the other pieces that we're really proud about is that we offer sliding scale fees, so we don't turn any family away because of money.
I love that. I think I love that you guys offer that sliding scale fee for families so that they can really have the needs met for their individual kiddo. So let's jump in here. Can you help break down for our families and professionals that are listening the difference between, I'm going to say 504 and IEP, but before we get to that, I also want to throw in there an EMT. Sometimes they're called a screening meeting or a determination of needs assessment. They have a lot of terms. So I would love to kind of talk about the difference of what those three things are, a screening meeting, a 504, and an IEP to set our stage for what we're going to chat about today.
That's a great question. So an EMT meeting, which can also be called SST meetings in other states, pupil personnel meetings, et cetera, it's in Maryland, it's called the educational management team. And what it is a group of professionals and staff that work at the school to discuss the student. It is not part of a legally mandated process in any state. It is not part of the Individuals with Disability Education Act or IDEA, which is the special education law. And it's not part of the Section 504 plan. So it's really a very informal meeting. Sometimes parents ask for a Section 504 or an IEP meeting, and they get deferred to what's called the EMT meeting. And just so parents know, that is not part of a legally mandated process, and they still have the rights to request the other meetings, which we'll get into in a few minutes. So the EMT meeting is, again, like I said, informal. Team collects notes. Typically, the parents share concerns, and the school comes up with an action plan. And that action plan could involve going down the IEP route, which is under IDEA. It could go down the route of looking for eligibility for a Section 504 plan, or it could be just implementing an informal plan, such as a reading intervention in a school, a behavior management plan, whatever the concern is, the parent that they brought to the school. So that's what an EMT meeting is. Now, regards to a screening meeting, and in Maryland, it's called the Child Find meeting. That is the first step of the IEP process, the Individualized Education Plan process. And that is a legally mandated process with a given timeline. And that child find meeting, that screening meeting, is when the parents share their concerns. Everything is documented. There are legal notes. They're called prior written notice. And the parent shares their concerns and the school determines whether or not they suspect an educational disability, which is different from a medical disability, which we can get into a little bit later. At that time, the team, which 100% involves the parents, you as the parents are members of the IEP team, determine whether or not they suspect an educational disability. And then there's a conversation about, is there additional information needed or warranted to make that determination? And if so, they may recommend assessments, either cognitive assessments, which we used to call IQ scores. They would recommend educational assessments, which to determine what their your child's present levels are in math, reading, and writing. They will look at executive functioning or attention. They could also look at depression, anxiety, and ADHD, again, depending on what the concerns are. So that's the first step of the IEP process. However, the team can also determine, the school-based team can also determine whether or not, since they're determining whether or not they suspect an educational disability, they can say no. And then what happens? The parents can appeal, and we could talk about some dispute resolution options afterwards. They can disagree with the team, which they should, and document in those notes, which are called prior written notice. But typically, the team may either say, well, we don't really suspect an educational disability. We see that your child does have ADHD, for example, so we can write what's called a Section 504 plan, or they might send you back to the EMT meetings to discuss some informal ways to work with your child and do some trial interventions. So those are really the differences between the initial meetings of the three different options: the EMT meeting, the screening for child find, or the Section 504 plan.
So if a parent is concerned about their child, their student, in terms of school, from like the bell when they get to school to the closing bell when they leave school, mm-hmm. what should a parent do first?
The first thing they should do is have a conversation with the classroom teacher. The classroom teacher knows your child the best and share those concerns. Now, that typically happens in an informal conversation. So parents of kindergartners, first graders, you know, new students to schools, that's usually where the conversation happens. However, if a parent continues to have these concerns, even if it's after 1 month, they don't have to wait years and years and years, they should write a letter to the school and email the principal, the assistant principal, and the classroom teacher requesting a IEP screening meeting if they suspect their child has an educational disability. That could be anything from learning disability, autism, speech and language, like receptive and expressive language, where you feel like your child is not understanding what they are hearing, or they're not able to get out orally what they're trying to say. If they're concerned about your child, if they're concerned about their child's writing, you know, is their spelling inappropriate or poor? Is their handwriting not developmentally appropriate? Are they having a hard time remembering math facts? I mean, even those basic skills are concerns when they get to a certain grade. And so they write a letter and they say, requesting an IEP screening meeting. Now, it's very important in that letter that language is used. We are requesting an IEP screening meeting, because that is a general term, that we suspect our child has an educational disability and they're not able to access the general education curriculum. That starts the IEP process, and the team is required, the school is required to hold a screening meeting to go through those questions that we just, that I just discussed about, are there concerns, and if they suspect a disability, should they test? So that is really right what you should do right away. It's not great. It's not a good idea to wait years and years and years of continuing to express your concerns to the school. You want early intervention and you want it swiftly. And the IEP process is a way to do that.
Let's talk about, we talk about an IEP screening, and then you talk about an education management team, which is also called different things in different areas. What would be best to ask for? It sounds like if a parent has concerns, to specifically state, I'd like an IEP screening meeting so that you can discuss what that means for specialized instruction versus an educational management team. Can we kind of talk a little bit about that difference deeper so that people can understand the difference of the two? What it would be the purpose of an educational management team meeting? What is the school-based purpose of that? Just so parents can really, and professionals listening can really understand the difference of, yes, we know that the IEP screening meeting is going to kick off some legal stuff that we're going to chat about here, but what would the purpose be of that educational management team for a child?
Okay. The educational management team meeting, the EMT meeting that we were talked about earlier, is really a school-based team, and parents are involved in that process. They get invited to the meeting. There are no required members, but it typically consists of the classroom teacher, a guidance counselor, or a special educator, and they listen to the parents' concerns. And what that could mean for a child is that the parents share their concerns. The school will share information such as, you know, reading levels and math levels and how they've done on standardized tests. Some of those may include, you know, in all around the country, they use something called MAP testing for reading and math to determine reading levels. And that's just one example. There's iReady, there's other diagnostic materials they use. And then the school will come up with an informal plan. So they might put your child in a reading intervention class. They may have the school counselor meet with your child if there are some social, emotional, or behavioral concerns. But the goal of all of this is to make your child available to learn, that they can access the curriculum. So some students, for example, may have a difficult time with mathematics and may require additional support. That team could decide and determine that, yes, we're going to implement or give this child some more small group instruction or work with the paraeducator in the classroom. That's just one example. If the child has some behavioral concerns, such as work avoidance, for example, if writing is hard for the student, sometimes we see students go to the bathroom a lot or ask for a drink of water or go to their locker because they're trying to avoid work, the team may come up with a behavior plan or a way to collect and a data collection plan to determine what is causing their work avoidance, what's happening right before they're going to the bathroom to see if there's a pattern or trend. Are they being presented with a task that involves a lot of writing, and that's the antecedent for them to want to avoid the work? And that could be a pattern in mathematics, that could be for reading. There's no set antecedent. And then create an intervention. And if that's the behavior piece, the work avoidance, they want to determine the function, which is, you know, the data collection, then the team would implement a behavior plan, which can, you know, for the elementary school could be a behavior point sheet where your child earns rewards or points or tokens and then would have an incentive. But once they determine the function of that behavior, the team may also look at other academic interventions. So that's really what happens at an EMT meeting, and they come back to the team, or they should come back to the team every 8 weeks or at the end of every quarter to see if those interventions have worked and your child is back on track. And if not, at that point, the team may recommend going to an IEP screening meeting.
Thank you for clarifying that. I know there's some confusion in terms of, it almost seems like a choose your own adventure option in terms of like, what are we supposed to do? You know, I think parents have this fear and this frustration, and it's their baby and they're just trying to figure out what's the best route to go down. And so, you know, let's go back to that parent request for an IEP screening. Are there ways parents can more effectively advocate for the process that takes place, meaning that they write a letter requesting the IEP screening? How can a parent effectively advocate the areas of concern that they're seeing with their student, their child, but then also to ensure that they didn't miss anything? Because often when we're coming from a place of fear and love, we say, all right, my student has challenges in reading. Oh my gosh, I need to get an IEP for reading. But sometimes if we take that greater view, there's some other elements that may be impacting that student with accessing their education. So from a parent standpoint, they're writing this letter requesting a screening. Is there anything that you have seen work well to ensure that that parent is addressing kind of global concerns?
Oh, absolutely. That is a fabulous question. So the first thing a parent should do, again, after they notice this, their concerns, right? If they're concerned about reading or writing or math, any of those basic skills, even if they're concerned about their child's organization, for example, their child's not turning in homework or having a hard time with homework, and they want to request this formal process, they must write a letter to the school, the principal, the assistant principal, requesting specifically an IEP screening meeting. The letter must specifically state that they suspect their child has an educational disability, and they must specifically state that it is impacting their ability to access the curriculum. So those are the three points that need to go into that letter. For documentation purposes, if you are sending an email, have the letter be attached to the email instead of it being embedded in the email, just so they can, it's better for documentation purposes. And any communications you do have with the school, always put at the bottom of the email, please confirm receipt, just so you have that knowledge, first of all, that they're reading it and they can open it. But then also it does create a sort of paper trail for you to have. It's also very important to set up the tone, set up the stage for being collaborative. You want to work with the school, not against them, because we don't get anywhere in life by being mean to people. And these teachers and professionals are there to help your child. So it's important to set up that tone. And so adding to the letter, we look forward to working collaboratively with your team. Those little sentences go a long way. So they know you're working with them and not against them. So that's the best way to start the process, is by writing that letter.
How can a parent ensure that they're kind of taking more of a global view of what they see versus I see an impact in reading, but what can we make sure that we're, is there something that a parent can do to ensure that they're casting a broader net in terms of impact for their student, so that when they go to the screening meeting, everything is looked at? And then if it moves forward to assessments, that they're ensuring that the student is assessed in all needed areas?
Yes. So that is really a great question. And actually, what's important when I talked about setting the stage, that's a really good way to look at it, is that it's really important for parents to, first of all, know that it's possible that, like I shared before, that the difficulties in reading, writing, and math may not be due to the inability to learn how to read, write, and do calculation. There could be emotional reasons, attention reasons, that they're not able to access the curriculum. So, for example, a child who's experienced some trauma, such as the death of a parent, they're moving into a new school system and the curriculum may look different. The teaching styles are different. Those can all be contributing factors to why they're seeing a decrease in performance in the academic areas. There could be some social pieces going on, especially as the kids get up in age, that they're, you know, your child may be being bullied, or there could be some social scenarios of peer pressure, and all of that emotion, and especially with the pandemic, all of the mental health issues that have arisen during the pandemic for these students are really impacting their ability to access the curriculum. So when you go to a meeting, it is super important to be prepared for that meeting and to make sure that you're able to express everything going on in your child's life, but also know what questions to ask the team, especially in those social emotional areas. So I always have parents prepare a statement prior to going into any school meeting that lists out in bullet form, because bullets are much more effective than writing a summary, especially when you're talking to a team, because it's extremely intimidating walking into a meeting by yourself or even with one other person with 10, 12 staff members, and you're walking in, you're sitting down, and they say to you, tell us what's going on. What are your concerns? And I see this all the time, and I understand this also as a parent. you kind of don't know what to say. So being prepared is very, very important. So I always tell parents to write a parental input statement, and you don't have to give it to the school before the meeting. You use it as your talking points, and you can give it to the school in writing after the meeting in case you want to tweak it. So what I have parents do is separate a list with the parental input is, what are your child's strengths? What are they great at? What are the gifts that you see in your child, which may not be the same gifts that the school sees? What are their interests and hobbies outside of school? Bringing the positivity to the table is important, because not everybody at that table and in that meeting, and I say table, but I'm really saying meeting, will have eyes on your child or even have met your child. So you want to paint them a picture, and bringing a picture of your child is even better. So they have a visual of you know, who your child is, and they're not just a case number or any random student. So sharing all your child's strengths, and then sharing your concerns, not just the academic concerns, as Wendy noted, but also, are there pieces going on behind the scenes? Was there a recent divorce or a move? Are you noticing difficulties with your child's paying attention at home, or they're really tired? Small things. How are they sleeping? How is their eating? Anything that you can think about in their lives, you want to share and be open with the team, because keeping anything from the team is not going to be able to allow them to help your child. So being open and honest and communicative with the school is very important. And having that document to guide that discussion and to guide your talking points in advance is important. Other pieces that you will put into that document are, you'll have your strengths, you'll have your concerns, but a really good question to pose to yourself coming into the meeting is, what do you want from the school? How do you think the school can help your child? And it's a hard question to answer, because a lot of parents don't know what services the school has to offer. So you can use broad strokes. We want the school to teach our child how to read, or we want the school to let us know if our child has autism. We want the school to tell us why our child is having difficulty making friends, not being invited to birthday parties, not giving us eye contact in conversation, melting down when they get home in regards to their homework. I mean, anything that you want the school to do. We want our child to work with a special education teacher because we're concerned about their writing. We want to know if the school can provide counseling services. I mean, anything. Can the school give us an extra set of books for home? Anything that you want the school to do to help your child, you can ask for, because it's not based on what resources the school has. It's based on what your child needs. So coming into the meeting, being proactive, preparing in advance is important. And if you forget something, it's okay, because there is a form typically at a screening meeting that will go through their educational history and ask you questions about, you know, have you had their vision checked? Have you had their hearing checked? When was the last time they had their annual checkup? Are you concerned about your child's speech? You know, are they lisping or mispronouncing any words? So they'll ask you those direct questions. So if you miss anything, it's okay, because they'll ask you questions. And if you remember something at the end, or a question they ask you triggers a thought, then you can say it. And at any time during the meeting, you can pause and say, you know what, I need a minute, let me think, or I need a break, because that's fine too. So being proactive and communicating with the school is very, very important.
I know people can't see us, but I'm shaking my head, because I hope people are taking notes, if not re-listening, because you, Jennifer, have just dropped so many fantastic nuggets and low-hanging fruit that people can grasp onto and really put into action now. And, you know, I love, what do you want from the school? That's a great question. And I kind of always term it as, you know, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it over the school and ask for anything, what would it be? And as a parent, start writing those things down and then prioritizing the elements. And you can do that as a team, you can do that as an individual before you go in. But I think it's really important to then have this ahead of time, like you said, and prepare, because it's empowering. Because I say it all the time on the podcast, you walk into that meeting as a parent and the room usually gets quiet, right? And so then you're very self-conscious of what is happening. So it's like walking into a party and all of a sudden you walk into the party and people stop and listen and stop and look at you. You start to then become nervous and self-conscious. So if you're prepared and you have this, and again, you don't have to share it with the team, but you have these bullet points of your baby and how you see your baby, the gaps, the gains, what you're looking for, then you can be more confident with the conversation and setting that tone. So I think that's excellent advice. Can I ask you, you mentioned prior written notice. When would a parent expect to receive a prior written notice? So we really have just gotten to the IEP screening meeting. We went through that screening meeting. Would a parent expect to receive a prior written notice after that initial screening meeting?
Can I add one thing to the part about what parents could bring to the meeting?
Yes.
It's really important. One other piece that parents can bring to the meeting are work samples. It's really important to bring if you have tangibles of what you're concerned about. So for example, if you are concerned about writing, if you have work samples that you can bring in, then that's fabulous because you may see a different child's, you know, your view of how your child writes may be different than the schools. Typically schools would give you a final work product versus what a rough draft looks like. So it's important that if you have those work samples to bring them in. Also, if you have any other data at home about, you know, when you hear them reading, I have parents bring videos of their child to the school at meetings. Because if the school is saying their child can do something and then the parents working at home if you're working at home with your child and they're not doing it, then 100%, you can bring in a short video or send it in advance to the meeting. So it's not just about what you're saying. It's also about what you can bring. And I just wanted to add that because it's important.
Absolutely. That is incredibly important. Bring video work samples. And you can also mark if a child was medicated when they did a sample, non-medicated, and kind of add in some elements there for parents, because I think the more you bring to show an educational impact, the better the outcomes will be.
Right. And being prepared for the meeting and being proactive. So if there was an outside evaluation, if you had decided to test your child for any type of education, any type of disability before the meeting, send it to the school in advance so they have time to review it. You don't want to hand it to them at the meeting because A, they won't be able to review it at the meeting and they won't have a chance to really read what you're presenting. And it's important to give that in advance as well.
You bring up a good point, Jennifer. Parents will often ask, should I pursue assessments and testing provided through the school system or should I seek outside assessments? What is your take on that?
So it depends on where they are in the process, right? So if they have concerns and it's the first time they're going to the school and the school decides to test and the school says, you know what? Yes, we agree. We think that there's an educational disability. We think that we know we want to recommend assessments to determine if there's, you know, a disability, then they'll offer testing. And the pros, it's free, right? It's free. The school has to test. Will it be as in-depth as you may want it? No, because the schools do not conduct neuropsychological assessments, which is important to note, which are more in-depth in regards, and they actually hold a different perspective. You know, it's a different way of interpreting the data. But you will most likely would recommend a psychoeducational, which again is the cognitive, what their ability levels are, and an achievement test, which is the academics, and also rating scales for, let's say, executive functioning skills, attention, depression, anxiety, any other types of non-academic skill, you know, non-academic issues or concerns that you have. So it's free. There's a legally mandated timeline. So therefore, you have to wait for the testing to get done because it's a 90-day timeline from start to finish of the process. And some families don't want to wait 90 days to get the results and to come back to see if their child will qualify for services. And they decide to test privately. So with testing privately, there are also pros and cons. The pro of it is that you can ask for more in-depth assessments. So for example, if the school feels that they have enough information with the psychoeducational, that might be the end of the formal assessments. Whereas if you're working with a neuropsychologist or a private psychologist, that they might want to dive deeper into different areas. That's not to say the school system wouldn't do that, but it's really dependent on the school psychologist to make that determination, right? So that's the first pro of a private assessment. Another pro to that is that you get to choose who's assessing your child. So you can meet a few different people, see which one kind of jives with your style and has a good rapport with your child. Your child may work better with a male versus a female psychologist. You get to choose. Now, there are cons to having a private evaluation as well, which are A, it's a fortune of money. For some families, yes. For some families, no. It's all relative. They can go upwards of $3,000 to, I've seen some that are $5,000 and $6,000. Insurance doesn't typically cover the educational portion. They may cover the psychological, but you have to check with your insurance companies. Some hospitals, like Children's Hospital, Kennedy Krieger, I'm just talking about local ones, Johns Hopkins, offer free assessments, but typically there's like a year or more waiting list. So that's also really frustrating. And that also may not cover the educational portion, the financial educational portion of the assessment. So that's one negative side. The other negative side is that the school does not have to accept the report. And it is also considered a medical diagnosis, not an educational diagnosis, an educational disability. So while your child may determine that your child has dyslexia or learning disorder in written expression, written language, then that the school may look at it and say, yes, well, we understand that's a medical diagnosis. However, we're not seeing the educational impact. So therefore, we're not finding your child eligible for special education. So because there are different definitions of an educational disability versus, the more medical disability that you would get from an outside evaluation. That's one. The second piece is that if they accept the report, and they usually will accept the report, that does not mean they are going to accept all the recommendations of that report. And that's where it really gets into the weeds. So for example, we see some reports that are, we call like boilerplate. So this, no matter who the child is, you might see the same recommendations for every child that has dyslexia or every child that has autism, depending where they are on the spectrum. So, we want to make sure those reports are really individualized. And then the school may disagree. So where the private report may say, your child requires one-to-one instruction throughout the school day, for example, if they're really below grade level, or your child needs direct and embedded social skills instruction, the school will say, we don't see that. We don't agree there. We're not going to take that recommendation. So those are really the pros and cons of the report. If you are getting an outside assessment, then it's important that the school knows that, because if they decide to also conduct additional assessments, you can't have the same assessment completed within a year. You get what's called the practice effect. And one of those assessments won't count. So it is important for you to sign a release. And I can't stress this enough. The communication between outside providers and the school is essential, and it's critical, because everybody here wants to help your child, and it does take a village. And so the collaboration is really, really important.
Can I just sidestep for a moment? How would a parent work collaboratively with the team when you're talking about recommendations and an outside evaluation?
So again, it would depend on where they are in the process. If you are at an IEP meeting and the school recommended testing, at that point, you would have either had an assessment, right? Because you're at the stage, you might have brought the assessment and they are just collecting additional data, or they're recommending assessment and you're kind of on the fence. Should I have the school do it? Should I look into private assessments? Or you're 100% letting them know that you're doing it privately. At that time, you let the school know. You do not have to sign anything at that meeting. And it's, don't feel pressure to sign right away. you can take the paperwork home to read and review and go over and call a consultant or, you know, talk to your doctor about it, you know, asks a professional. I always caution parents to compare their children to other children with similar disabilities or similar concerns or issues, because every child is different. So even if another child has difficulty reading, their skill deficit could be different. So it's important to ask questions and not feel like you have to answer the team right away, because you can get back to them. And do your research, you know, find somebody who you would like to test your child if you don't feel comfortable with the school. Hopefully you will feel comfortable with the school, and you trust, you have to have a level of trust of where you're sending your child to school. And I always tell parents to walk into that situation with a, you know, with some positivity and with the expectation of collaboration. And so when we were in person, and now that we're going back in person, I know this sounds silly, but I always, you know, I say to parents, if, and again, it's based on financial need, or I might bring it, you know, a set of munchkins from the donut shop, you know, bring a box of coffee, or even, you know, a little bit of candy, just something to kind of, I don't say lighten the moment, but, you know, show that it's going to be collaborative and that you're working together. I mean, a little bit goes a long way. And teachers are always hungry, because I was a classroom teacher and we were always hungry. Sure. Sweets, right? So yeah, so that's a way to build the collaboration and getting what's called an ROI, or release of information. So if you do work with an outside provider, whether it's a mental health professional, a therapist, whether your child gets private speech language, whether your child is going to see a private occupational therapist, physical therapist, anyone outside of the school, it's great and ideal to have that communication. You don't want to hold information back from the school. And I think, and I'm saying this also as a parent and a consultant, sometimes it's a natural feeling to not want to share every little detail that's going on, right? You don't want to share about any discourse in the home or any other trauma that you're having that your child can be kind of getting that vibe off of you. So it's normal to feel that way, and it's hard to share some of that information with the team, but if there could be any educational benefit to sharing it, then you should. That would be my recommendation.
Yes. So let's talk about prior written notice for a moment.
Okay.
Let's go to kind of the IEP screening meeting, kind of back to where we started. Would a parent expect to receive a prior written notice as a result of their screening meeting? And then I want to kind of talk about what a prior written notice is.
So prior written notice, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but prior written notice are almost like notes from the meeting that you receive after the meeting. So even though it says prior, it's really what's covered during the meeting. And it's probably the most important document you'll receive after the meeting. So any request that you make at that meeting. So for example, if you say, let's say your child does have an IEP and you say, I want more services in reading, or I want counseling, or I want you to test for, I'm concerned my child is depressed. Is there anything you can do? Okay, if we're going back to the mental health piece, my child's coming home and going to sleep and not completing their work, anything. And you are making a request, or you want to make sure that that request goes into this document called prior written notice. And the initials, the acronym is PWN. And special education, as we know, is full of acronyms. We actually, you know, WEG, our group, we actually have a postcard with all the acronyms on it. And we give to parents because it's hard to keep track of. It's like speaking a foreign language. Be like me, you know, going and into a conversation about medicine. So during the meeting, it's really, really important to ask for what you're asking for and what you're saying to be documented. Again, for the paper trail purposes, but going back to the collaboration piece, when even as a consultant, we want to set this, we 100% want to set the stage for collaboration. Even with the first email we send to the school, I look forward to working with your team. I'm excited to work with your team again, you know, anything to let them know. And actually, as a consultant, when I go to the schools, I start out by saying, are you familiar with our group? This is our philosophy. We work collaboratively. It takes a village. we are transparent. We don't want to, you know, we want to just make sure we have good communication. So setting that tone right away is equally as important for consultants as it is for parents. But during the meeting, it's okay to say, can you document this in prior written notice? I typically then say, just so you know, I look at prior written notice not as a negative thing and not as a bad document, but really just to document, you know, what we're talking about. Because if we come back in 3 months, it's good to be able to recall what was discussed, to let the team know you're not looking at it as a threatening document. So then after the meeting, and in different states, they have different regulations. In the state of Maryland, for example, the school has 5 business days to get you those documents after the meeting. And those are, when you get an email from the school, typically the subject line says 5-day documents or 5-day doc. So it might not say PWN or prior written notice. And that's really every document that was produced from that meeting. So it could include the prior, it will include the prior written notice. It will include if you signed consent for them to test, it will include that document. It will include, let's say if they wrote an IEP, it'll include the revised or draft IEP. And it is of the utmost importance to read that prior written notice word by word to make sure that every single thing that you asked for or that talked about or that wanted in the notes of the meeting is there. And if it's not, that document is not the end all be all. You can write and should write what's called a response. And what I call it is correcting the record. And when I go to meetings, and as all consultants, I'm sure, you know, all consultants do is we take pretty copious notes. So you can submit your notes to the school because they're your notes. And those could be uploaded into your child's folder. And you can also, and you should also write a letter and ask them to attach your notes or your letter to their prior written notice. Everything is digital and can be uploaded into a system. In Maryland, it's called MOIEP for those listeners in Maryland. And correct it. Every time you ask for something at a meeting, I want more services for my child. I want the school to test my child. I want to know if my child can change classes, anything, no matter how small or how big, the school has to respond, not only to what they're disagreeing to, but what they are agreeing to. And they have to provide a rationale of why they're disagreeing. So it's a great document in general. I really like the document, but it's super important to make sure that it's accurate when you get it.
Would you recommend that if you are setting the record and you're following up, that you put a note in there in terms of your emailing, you know, here's my notes, this is what I want to set the record straight on, that is, do you formally state, please attach this to the prior written notice with this date, and then, or please upload this to the student's file? What would you recommend parents state to make it more formal?
Right. So if there are inaccuracies in any of the IEP paperwork, the first thing is you have to let the appropriate team member know, which is, again, correcting the record while also maintaining your relationship. I keep wanting to go back to that. You could first ask them, you know, will you correct it? So it is on their paperwork, you know, on their state paperwork, on their prior written notice document themselves. And if they don't agree, then you can then ask for it to be included in, you can say, please include this as part of my parental input, because it would be considered input or an addendum to their notes. Or you can determine whether or not to make a FERPA request. And a FERPA request would be to amend the record versus if submitting your statement for the record suffices.
What does federal law say about prior written notice?
So that's a really good question. So FERPA stands for the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And it is a federal law that protects the privacy of student education records. And the law applies to all the schools that receive funds under the applicable program from the United States Department of Education. And FERPA gives parents the certain rights with respect to their educational records and up to the age of 18 unless parents get consent. And you have the right to inspect and review the records. If you can have the right to request that a school corrects records, which you believe to be inaccurate or misleading. And that's where, if they don't agree to correct the record, that's where your rights come in under federal law.
So if a parent feels like their voice or their student's voice isn't being heard, what steps should be taken? And kind of where do you guys come into the picture for families?
So we come into family, so consultants come into the process at all different stages, right? We come in if the parents are just starting to get concerned. We come in if the parents and the schools kind of have a damaged relationship, we want to help repair it. We come in, we give objective expert opinions. So we are not hired guns, but we guide the parents through all of these, what, you know, these pieces, if there's a disagreement. We also know where our job ends and the parents may require working with a special education attorney. So that's also part of what we do, but because our group works so collaboratively, as other educational consultants do as well, you know, we rarely get pushback regarding having the parental document become part of the record by asking the school to include it as part of the record. So they might, while they might not correct their record, we want to make sure it's included in the student's file. And that's where we would come in. It's kind of sad to say that sometimes the parents' voices are not heard until an outside professional gets involved. It makes me feel sad that parents will ask and ask and ask. And because the law is complex and the materials that parents are told to read, you know, their rights and their rights as parents is not as easy to read as we would like. And honestly, it's not as easy to read as we would like because a lot of it is complex language in general that's difficult to put into layman's terms, no matter how hard you try. And not knowing that, they don't know what to ask for or how to navigate some of these pieces. And that's really where we come in. I would encourage families to, you know, there's this, when parents start the IEP process, they get a procedural rights booklet. And it summarizes the law, you know, it tells them what they're entitled to, but it's dense and it's small. However, if you go onto your state's website, or you go, even if you go to Google and you Google rights, you know, your state regulations, there are easier documents that to read that will give you the same content. Like our group put something out as well. And in Maryland, MSDE has some more, you know, kind of easier to read resources than just that really dense booklet that parents are given before the meeting.
Wow. I think we just scratched the surface. I think this probably leads more questions, but I think it's a great kickoff to what parents and professionals can kind of expect when starting this journey. As we wind our conversation down, I have just a couple of fast questions to ask. Do you have a favorite productivity tool or resource tool that you suggest for parents or something that you're loving in a professional manner these days?
In regards to what area, for example, like?
Just in terms of helping parents, special education, anything.
I mean, rights law is fine, but it's not, doesn't dive in. I mean, I go to organizations based on the disability, like the International Dyslexia Association or, you know, the Autism Society. I mean, I go to the source and I go to evidence-based articles, like, you know, peer-reviewed articles.
So as we're winding down, what should I have asked you that I didn't know enough to ask?
What's in an IEP? What's the purpose of an IEP versus a Section 504 plan? Why would a parent or why would a school team feel that one is required over the other? I think that would be an important question because we talked about these initial meetings, but not what the outcomes of the meetings are.
Yeah. So let's ask about that real quick and we'll weave that in terms of, we kind of went down just the IEP screening, but what would be the benefit of an IEP versus a 504?
So there are some there are differences between an IEP and a Section 504 plan. And the IEP, in order to be found eligible for an IEP, the education must be what's called adversely affected by an educational disability. And there are, you know, 13 categories of educational disabilities. With a Section 504 plan, the eligibility is a student must have a disability that, and I'm quoting, substantially limits one or more of a major life activity. And that could be learning, attention, concentrating. The IEP is a legally mandated process with a timeline and has required components, required IEP team members, which include parents, whereas a Section 504 plan has no federal timeline or plan, no mandated members, except those qualified to interpret the assessments, and believe it or not, no mandated parent involvement. An IEP is where you'll find annual goals for your child in order to close the gap between what their ability is to their current achievement. So a goal could be in an academic area. A goal could be with self-regulation, organization, including time management. A goal could be social skills, beginning, maintaining, ending a conversation, reading nonverbal cues, et cetera. An IEP also would include accommodations, extended time, preferential seating, using speech to text. An IEP has a whole transition section. It talks about extended school year, and you have to review it at least once a year. It's an annual review at minimum. It's also required to have progress monitoring. So at the end of every quarter, as deemed by the IEP itself, you will get progress notes on your child's progress towards those annual goals. A Section 504 plan will provide this, you know, can provide the supplementary aids and services and the accommodations, such as the, like I said, extended time, preferential seating, speech to text. But, and most people don't know this, it can include services, but there are no annual goals in a Section 504 plan where there are in an IEP. So it's a tighter legal document. And so there is that major difference. But again, most people don't know that a Section 504 plan can include reading interventions. It can include working with the counselor. The IEP also includes those pieces. A Section 504 plan does not have any legal requirement to be reviewed every year the way that an IEP does. An IEP ends at high school graduation or at age 21. Students with IEPs can receive special education until they're 21. Believe it or not, a Section 504 plan can be implemented at any age, which does include college. Section 504 plan, if you have any, if your school's not implementing the Section 504 plan. I actually had a phone call today that parent called me and they said, you know, their child's high school didn't even know their daughter had a Section 504 plan. And so I know, right? It's December. And so she can file a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights. And there are also dispute resolution options for an IEP. And, you know, again, there are state complaints, there's mediation, and there's due process on both the Section 504 and IEPs. So that's, you know, those are big differences. And the goals on an IEP, really, they are supposed to be measurable, specific. They're academic and functional. So life skills, you know, learning for independence, going to the grocery store. I mean, functional life skills can be part of an IEP or are part of an IEP if the student warrants that.
What would it be and why if I could have a billboard with one tip for parents?
One tip for parents. The more you know. I mean, I'm going back to like, one tip for parents are be aware of how your child is doing, both academically, but also their mental health and the social emotional piece. Even if they're doing well academically, what kind of toll is it taking on their stress level?
Yeah.
You know, the end all be all is not taking, you know, 15 AP classes in college. There's a college and not a college for every student. I mean, not every student is going into college. And I always say there's a P for every pod, right? There's your child is an individual. So, you know, I would say be aware of those pieces, but also ask a lot of questions. It's okay to ask questions. Your teacher is approachable. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call your teacher or send an email and set up a conference. A big tip I have is the written communication, is that if you do have a conversation with the school, if they call you after you first say, oh my God, is my child okay? You know, and they want to talk to you, it's okay to say, can I call you back? So you have time to prepare and get your thoughts together about why they're calling. It's really important to summarize the conversation and send it back to the school to make sure you're on the same page. but having open communication with the school is key. They can't read your mind and you can't read theirs.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time and just all of the goodness. Like I said, I think we really, truly just only scratched the surface, but at least opening the door and starting the process for parents to be more empowered on their journey through special education. So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you again for listening. A lot of information, a lot of takeaways. My three special ed strategy takeaways from this podcast include: bring tangibles to a meeting, even as a parent, whether that's a writing sample, a quick video snapshot of what your child is doing at home. It gives data and strength to what you're saying. Make sure that if you're uncertain with something or you're not agreeing with what is being said, have the team put it in the prior written notice to keep that documentation. And let's not forget to ask the question, what do you want from the school? And being specific with that. We want the school to help with XYZ and prioritize that to help set the stage for learning and set the stage for support. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for free tips? Head over to learningessentials.edu and you can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting plus bonus questions to ask. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide an individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching, educational therapy, and BrainCamp, our executive function support model. If you are a parent, I've got you covered through IEP coaching. I hope this conversation today will help make it a good day.